just might. Laura Sullivan, NPR News, Washington.
The Japanese defense minister has ordered the dispatch of ships to fight piracy off the shores of Somalia. The order comes as more than a dozen warships are guarding Somalia's waters. Countries such as the United States, Britain, Iran, France, and Germany have naval forces off the Somali coast or on their way there. China and South Korea have also ordered the dispatch of warships to protect their vessels and crews from pirates. Somalia is a nation of about 8 million people. It has not had a functioning government since warlords overthrew a dictator in 1991 and then turned on each other. I'm Carl Castle, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Angie's List, providing first-hand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at angieslist.com.
And good morning. This is David Inge here on WLL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 in Urbana. Glad to have you with us this morning. Today, we are continuing in our live coverage of the impeachment trial of Governor Rod Blagojevich, now going on in the Illinois State Senate in Springfield. This is day number three, and we expect that coverage from Illinois Public Radio to resume at 10:15. We thought we would take a moment here to recap what happened yesterday in day two of the trial. The governor was not in attendance. He was continuing his public relations blitz, doing national media interviews. He was on the East Coast. Lawmakers, however, did hear from the governor as portions of FBI wiretaps were played publicly for the first time. Sean Crawford has this report.
Hey, Lon. How are you?
Governor Blagojevich was heard on a series of phone calls discussing horse racing legislation that was on his desk at the time. Prosecutors say Blagojevich was attempting to shake down a horse racing executive for campaign money in exchange for signing the measure. He allegedly wanted a contribution before January 1st, when a new ethics law would take effect. The governor was heard speaking with who is believed to be his former chief of staff turned lobbyist Lon Monk on two taped calls. On another, with his brother Rob, who chairs his campaign organization.
Hey, how we doing?
Good.
Talked to Lon, and he says Johnny Johnson's good for it.
Okay.
He's going to give you, you know, he didn't get it, but he's, you know, I'm good for it. I got to just decide what accounts to get it out of. And Lon's going to talk to you about some sensitivities legislatively tonight when he sees you with regard to timing of all of this.
Right, before the end of the year, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
The man referred to in the tape, John Johnston, runs two Chicago-area horse tracks, Balmoral and Maywood Park. Johnston's attorney, Dan Reinberg, was quick to say his client gave no money in exchange for action on the legislation. The governor eventually did sign the horse racing measure into law several days after his December 9th arrest. Federal authorities edited the tapes the Senate heard. Four conversations lasted a total of just over 5 minutes in length. They say the editing was done to protect their ongoing criminal investigation. Alton Democratic Senator Bill Hain, himself a former prosecutor, says the tapes are simply another piece of evidence against the governor.
I mean, they are what they are. They're the governor's voice, and he's making repeated demands for contributions. I suppose many politicians do that. There's an argument in that regard, but I have to consider them with the entire case.
But another senator, Democrat Mike Jacobs of the Quad Cities, says the recordings failed to persuade him.
Well, I didn't think they were as bad as what I expected. I've been led to believe that it was going to be the governor saying, hey, look, if you don't do this, this is going to happen. You know, what he did may have been greasy, but I'm not sure it's criminal. The criminalization of politics is something I worry about. I'd really tell anyone who is thinking about getting government to really question what you're doing and to be very careful because, you know, one man's shakedown is another man's rough political business.
Jacobs says he feels the impeachment process has moved too quickly, and he's unsure if the prosecution has proven its case so far. Jacobs admits he's probably in the minority of senators with that view. Federal authorities say the tapes represented just one of several schemes the governor planned. Blagojevich denies he did anything illegal. He says once the tapes are heard in their entirety, he'll be vindicated. But prosecutors say what the Senate didn't hear on other wiretap recordings is a political crime spree that would make Lincoln roll over in his grave. FBI agent Daniel Kane, who monitored many of those recordings and signed off on the criminal complaint that led to the governor's arrest, testified statements in that document are accurate.
There were a lot of people that listened to and compared these quotes and summaries a lot of times during the process.
The governor is quoted in profanity-laced conversations about getting jobs or money for himself in exchange for a U.S. Senate appointment and other actions. Blagojevich's impeachment trial in the Illinois Senate could result in his removal from office. That would be the first time that's occurred in state history. With that at stake, the governor and his attorneys have chosen to stay away from the proceedings, saying the rules are stacked against them. Instead, he's been making the national talk show rounds. The impeachment trial moves into its third day today, and senators will hear from the state's auditor general, the head of a state rulemaking panel, and a few House lawmakers who will outline more of the prosecution's case. Some believe the trial could wrap up before the end of this week. I'm Sean Crawford.
And as Sean said, the witnesses scheduled to appear today will be focusing on the governor's management of state government. He is accused of circumventing hiring laws, defying legislative decisions, and also wasting tax dollars. The earlier testimony covered federal criminal charges against the governor. The Senate trial listened yesterday, as Sean said, to the governor's voice on secretly recorded conversations and also heard from an FBI agent. The governor continues to say he's not going to take part in a trial. He says the rules are unfair. He's done nothing wrong. And again, we're thinking that it's possible that testimony could be wrapped up today and a vote could take place perhaps as soon as tomorrow. And just in just a couple of minutes, our coverage here from Illinois Public Radio will resume. Thought I'd like to bring you a little bit of an update on what for some people is another big story today, and that is the weather, particularly for the southern parts of Illinois. Here in Champaign-Urbana, I believe we got about 4 inches of snow, and as a result, the city of Champaign has activated the snow routes, and that's as of 11 o'clock today. And if you're on one of these streets, you have to move your car by 7 o'clock tonight. They're marked by permanent signs, and if your vehicle stays on the route after the activation, you are subject to towing at your expense. Parking remains prohibited on these streets until the Public Works Director cancels the activation. So that's for the city of Champaign. The snow routes, they are activated as of 11 o'clock today. Also, a reminder that as of 10 o'clock, the Public Works Director, this is also for Champaign, has declared the sidewalk snow and ice removal requirements in the downtown and campus town areas are in effect. And that's a city ordinance that requires the walks to be cleared 48 hours after the declaration. And if they're not cleared, they'll be cleared at the owner's expense. So again, that's for sidewalks for downtown and campus town areas for Champaign as of 10 o'clock. The sidewalk snow removal requirements are in effect. Otherwise, here for Champaign-Urbana, we're expecting today it will be partly to mostly sunny with a high of 19 degrees, some clouds moving in tonight, and a low of 14. It will be cloudy for Thursday with a chance of more occasional light snow and flurries and a high of 27 for Thursday night, cloudy with some showers of snow and flurries, the low 12, and for Friday, partly sunny and colder, the high 17. So possibility of maybe a little bit more snow and cold temperatures will be with us at least for a while. So winter is hanging on, but take heart, spring is not all that far away. You can imagine it, at least try that. Here on the campus of the University of Illinois, outside our studios here in Campbell Hall, the temperature is 17 degrees. And again, a reminder that a lot of our programming today during the day is preempted so that we can continue to bring you live coverage from Springfield of the impeachment trial of Governor Rod Blagojevich. We are now in day number 3. We will continue to hear from witnesses. Apparently, reports are that the prosecutor for the impeachment has trimmed his witness list somewhat, and it is possible that all of the testimony could wrap up today and that perhaps as soon as tomorrow, the Senate could take a vote. And, of course, we will have continued live coverage of all of this for you as we have breaks, and we expect that there will be breaks. We'll try to update you with various kinds of information on the weather, on the news, and on the markets. And perhaps if things wrap up this afternoon, we'll be able to join All Things Considered at 4. Otherwise, after the proceedings are finished for today. The time now is 10:15. We'll go back to Springfield for continuing live coverage of the impeachment trial in the Senate.
From Illinois Public Radio in Springfield, Rich Bradley along with Sean Crawford as we resume our live coverage of the state Senate trial, impeachment trial of Governor Rod Blagojevich. Originally, we went into a session about 9:30 this morning, and then almost immediately, the members went into caucus, especially to accommodate the Republican side. Senate Minority Leader Sean Christine Redonio asked for initially a 45-minute caucus, and she agreed then to a 30-minute caucus to consider questions apparently triggered by a change in the witness order by the House prosecutor, David Ellis.
Yeah, and then the witness, you're right, Rich, the witness was Connie Howard, a state representative from Chicago, a member of the House Impeachment Inquiry Panel. She was going to testify regarding the injury or potential injury, perceived injury to the state because of the scandal that surrounded Governor Blagojevich. And she was going to talk about interest rate, the bond rating for the state being changed, being lowered, costing the state money on borrowing money. So basically, that's what has changed, and now Republicans want to ask some questions of the witness who was on the stand yesterday, Chapin Rose, a Republican state representative from Mahomet. He testified yesterday regarding some other criminal allegations and also other criminal charges that were brought against other people who had dealings with Governor Blagojevich. So we will hear what those questions are. They are coming back from their private meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. In light of the exchange that we had, Your Honor, we understand that that there are some members who are interested in asking some questions in the record that may not be discussed by a live witness, and we would seek leave of the body to. Yes, sir. I would. We would move. We would orally move. That at the close of our witnesses today, that we would be permitted to collect any questions from the senators about the record and do our best to try to answer those questions, direct them to the relevant passages, or answer them ourselves.
You have all heard the House prosecutor's motion. Is there leave? Hearing no objection, I'm accepting the fact that there's leave. The motion is adopted. Okay. I'm sorry. Before we do that, recognition to Senator Redonio.
Thank you, Chief Justice. First of all, I just want to express our appreciation for the caucus and the time to reformulate our questions for Representative Rose. I would like to put on the record, however, that our caucus would like to have heard from all of the witnesses that were on the amended witness list. And we would ask that if there's other changes, that you notify us as soon as possible so we have the opportunity to formulate questions for the witnesses that we will be hearing. We do appreciate the motion that you just made. However, I would just point out that it sounds like then you would be answering the questions if that occurs, Mr. Prosecutor.
Well, Senator, I think that's correct. If there's no live witness, what we could do, I mean, you know, we're not looking to testify, but we would certainly at a minimum want to direct you to where we think you can find the answer and certainly assist in any way with helping you get the answer. We want you to have the answers to the questions.
Right. And I just note that, you know, obviously you're not a sworn witness, as you've noted as well. We appreciate the opportunity, though, and hope that our concerns have been noted. Thank you.
That was not in an objection to the motion, was it, Senator? Thank you. The record reflects it was not. I have a series of questions from the Republican caucus concerning Representative Rose's testimony, and we'll have to call him back in. The sergeant-at-arms is directed to escort Representative Rose back into the chambers to the podium.
And the witness from yesterday, Chapin Rose, being brought back to answer questions. He is being escorted back into the Senate, and he will take his place in front of the Chief Justice at the witness stand that they have set up in the Illinois Senate, and they will ask those questions. We also expect today, by the way, to hear from the state's Auditor General, Bill Holland, also the head of the state's rulemaking authority, the Joint Commission on Administrative Rules, Vicki Thomas, and then also the possibility of hearing from another state representative later this afternoon as well. Not sure if there's any other changes that will be made to a witness list, but it could be a full day of testimony, the third day of the governor's impeachment trial in the Illinois Senate. For those folks who have been listening in wondering possibly how long this process will last, they do seem to be getting very close to, after today, probably getting close to completing their witness list. So we could see a vote at some point later this week on whether or not to remove the governor from office.
From Senator Frank Watson, isn't it true that Ali Ott has testified before the before Atta became executive director of the Illinois Finance Authority, that Tony Resco sent him to talk to John Filan, the governor's budget director, and Filan told Atta that Filan had hired all the outside advisors for the Illinois Finance Authority, and that Resco told Alta that Filan would be trying to take over the agency, but that Alta should report directly to Resco?
Yes, Senator Watson, I believe that's a trouble I would have is I'm not sure that Tony Resco sent him to talk to John Filan. I think Mr. Resco, I think Mr. Atta's testimony was that someone from the administration would contact him about a meeting, and then that meeting subsequently was with Mr. Filan. But I think in general, that's fair. Thank you.
The second question is also from Senator Frank Watson. Isn't it true that Ali Atta testified under oath that Atta was told that there was a select group of advisors referred to as the Kitchen Cabinet? Who did Atta identify in his testimony as being members of that Kitchen Cabinet?
Senator Watson, I do recall that conversation being in the testimony. Unfortunately, I don't have the specific page site in front of me, but my memory serves that it was Mr. Kelly, Mr. Resco. I believe at that point in time, they may have mentioned Mr. Jay Hoffman. I cannot recall if they mentioned anyone else. If someone would want to provide me with the cite of the testimony, I'd be happy to read the specific quotation.
Next question comes from Senator Dave Siverson. As you are aware, your exhibits include the credit rating report on the state from Standard & Poor's and Crane's news article on both Standard & Poor's reports and the downgrading of the state by Fitch Ratings. The two credit rating agencies cite not just the governor's arrest, but also the state's budget hole, which Standard & Poor's called the state's growing budgetary shortfall. Don't they?
Senator, I would at first point out that in preparation for my testimony yesterday, I reread and reviewed extensively the two transcripts of Atta and Kerry, as well as the two plea agreements of Atta and Kerry. So my memory on this goes back to my service on the impeachment committee itself, which now is approximately a month or so old. That's my memory of it. That's my memory of it. I stand to be somewhat corrected, but I think that's correct. But again, my knowledge is a little bit dated at this point.
Follow-up question. Isn't it true that removal of the governor from office will not at all solve the budgetary shortfall?
I mean, that's sort of outside the purpose of why I'm here, but I would think that would make some sense.
Okay. Senator Dave Siverson, a second question. Isn't it true that our downgraded credit rating will require higher interest payments on both bonding we do in the future and for capital and for future short-term borrowing to pay our Medicare providers, and that those huge or higher interest rates will cost taxpayers millions of dollars over the years to come?
Again, Senator, my knowledge is somewhat dated at this point. I did review those documents when they came in as part of the committee. My memory of that is that there was a direct immediate cost in that the interest rate that we paid on the short-term debt note that was floated in December as a state, the interest rate went up, and we paid millions of dollars more in interest. It was in the $20 million range, as my memory serves. I can't give you the specific amount. There was also an insinuation made in the letter that this could potentially affect not only future debt ratings, but also our current debt. But I don't think the letter was explicit as to what exact consequences there would be beyond the one I just mentioned.
From Senator Chris Lauzon, you are not an expert in credit ratings and borrowing. Wouldn't it be appropriate for this impeachment tribunal to completely understand this governor's overall effect on our credit ratings and borrowing to have an expert in these matters testify before us?
Sure, Senator. It makes sense to me. And again, this is outside of the scope of why I was asked to come here by the council. Thank you.
Senator Tim Bivens, wouldn't it be appropriate for this impeachment tribunal to have Treasurer Geriulius personally tell us about the effects on our credit ratings and borrowing?
Senator, and I don't know where you're sitting at these days. I apologize. There you are. I appreciate your question because I was the one who asked on the record in the committee to have Mr. Giannullis send us a letter in the first place. So that was my question. So I would answer the same way I answered Senator Lawson's question. Yeah, I think that would make some sense.
From Senator Tim Bivens, wouldn't it appropriate for this impeachment tribunal? I'm sorry. Next question is from Senators John Milner and Tim Bivens. The governor does not currently have security clearance from the Department of Homeland Security, correct? Why?
Again, this goes back to our conversations a month ago on the committee, but my understanding of it was that it was revoked because of his arrest, and that's my understanding from a month ago.
And the second question, as you know, before the Department of Homeland Security revoked Governor Blagojevich's security clearance, he was privy to classified information about the welfare of the state and the people therein. Can Governor Blagojevich adequately access this same information without the security clearances?
Senator Milner, Senator Bivens, first, let me state that I don't know what he was privy to. I can only assume that that's what he was privy to. I think that would be a safe assumption. I think this is a big problem for the people of Illinois.
Senator Tim Bivens, again, how is the state of Illinois now receiving its classified information?
Again, I have no firsthand knowledge of that, and it wasn't why I was asked to be here, but having reviewed some of the documents that came in, I think that they've appointed other officials within the administration to receive such information, but I would refer you to somebody who would have better knowledge than I do on that.
Next, from Senator Dave Lutchenfeld. If a natural or man-made disaster was to occur while Governor Blagojevich's security clearances were revoked, who would act as a liaison to the federal government? Is this individual duly elected by the people of the state of Illinois?
I just simply don't know the answer to that question. It's beyond why I was asked to be here.
From Senator Dave Siverson, the governor has signed a handful of pieces of legislation since his arrest. Did the House Impeachment Special Investigation Committee thoroughly scrutinize and research that legislation against a friend of Blagojevich's filings with the State Board of Elections in an effort to discover the possibility of a pay-to-play or any other type of improper or illegal activity? Why or why not?
I can't speak for the entire committee, but there was a little bit of an issue in that the filing deadlines for documents, contributions with the State Board of Election, was not until January and after what would have been the actual impeachment vote. As I think you know, the committee was also prohibited essentially by the federal government from delving too far afield into the topics of pay-to-play because they were the subject of the ongoing criminal investigation. I know at some point in time that some documents were tendered via subpoena to the committee from attorneys for Friends of Blagojevich, although my memory serves in that letter that they said that was an incomplete listing because many of the documents had been taken in by the federal government as part of their investigation. Other than that, I can't really answer your question.
From Senator Matt Murphy, can any piece of legislation on Governor Blagojevich's desks from this point forward be signed into law or vetoed without an accusation of impropriety being made?
Sir Murphy, I don't see you. I'm sorry. Oh, there you are. I think you're asking me to draw a conclusion that's beyond my purpose here today, quite frankly. But personally, I think having watched different media accounts and other things that have happened since then, you've seen that question raised numerous times. And other than that, I really do think that's outside my scope today, and that's really an opinion of mine. But I would encourage all of you to make up your own minds.
Second question. Matt Murphy, can funds be released or contracts be signed by the governor's office without appearance of impropriety being made?
I would simply repeat what I said a minute ago, and if I could just leave it at that in the interest of time.
Senator Dave Lichtenfeld, as an investigator on the House Impeachment Special Investigation Committee, can Governor Blagojevich ever make any appointment for agency board, seat commissions, or any other appointment without a cloud of suspicion hanging over the appointment and the appointee?
Senator Lichtenfeld, this is very, my answer would be very similar to that of Senator Murphy's, and that I think that each person will have to draw their own conclusion, but my personal conclusion would be that, yes, everything would be highly suspect at this point.
Ask the House prosecutor if he wishes to have any redirect examination.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. The prosecutor has no further.
Representative Murphy, please. You wanted to communicate something? Did you have something that you wanted to share with us?
Representative Rose. If I may, I wanted to clarify one thing that I stated yesterday. That Mr. Kerry, I think there was a question that was asked about why Mr. Kerry decided to help with the fundraiser, and I think I said something that his law firm was business of the state. I think the accurate assessment that would be clients of his law firm had business of the state. I just want to make that clear to this body.
You may have another. Wait. There appear to be another list of questions. Entitled Questions for Representative Chapman Rose. It's the first list.
Okay.
From Senator Larry Bomke. Is it true that Aliotta has testified under oath in federal court to raising campaign contributions first for candidate Blagojevich in 2002 and later making a $25,000 campaign contribution to Governor Blagojevich in 2003 with the expectation that the contributions would obtain a board appointment for him from Governor Blagojevich?
Senator Bomke, I don't believe that he ever testified as to an expectation per se, but certainly throughout the time periods that contributions were being made, jobs were being discussed.
Senator Carol Pankow, are you aware that by January 2005, a Chicago newspaper reported that Chicago Alderman Dick Mell and Governor Blagojevich's father-in-law made similar allegations that Governor Blagojevich traded appointments for contributions of at least $25,000?
Senator Pinkow, I'm not clear as to what newspaper article you're referring to. I know that our committee took in a number of newspaper articles. There was one, something about a $25,000 club. To be honest with you, I don't know. I can't remember what paper that was. If that's the one you're referring to, that was an article that discussed a $25,000 club, in the context of appointments. But again, without knowing exactly what article you're talking to, I'm somewhat of a loss for words.
Senator Senator Kirk Dillard, is it true that Aliotta testified that his $25,000 check for the 2002 campaign contribution to candidate Blagojevich was laid on the table in front of candidate Blagojevich, and candidate Blagojevich asked if Atta had identified a business opportunities should candidate Blagojevich be elected?
Senator Dillard, that conversation is substantially such. The only correction I make is that I don't think there is a discussion of should he be elected, but he said has he identified something to the effect of has he identified positions within the administration, and at that point I was a candidate, a potential administration.
Tim Bivens, that in 2003 an appointment to the Illinois Finance Authority was discussed with him along with the need to make another contribution of at least $25,000 to Governor Blagojevich.
My understanding, my reading of that is that that was not the same conversation that Mr. Atta had a conversation about the Illinois Finance Authority in 2003, and then a short time thereafter, Mr. Resko contacted him and asked for a $50,000 campaign contribution, to which Mr. Atta indicated he could only give $25,000.
Senator Jones, is it true that Aliotta testified that after making another $25,000 contribution to Governor Blagojevich in 2003, he was directly by Governor Blagojevich that he, Blagojevich, was aware of the new contribution and told Atta any position he took with the administration had better be one where he could make some money?
Senator Jones, I believe that is accurate.
Senator Gary Dahl, is it true that Atta was appointed as executive director of the Illinois Finance Authority by Governor Blagojevich near the end of 2003 with a salary of $127,000?
Senator Dahl, the authority was not actually in effect until January 1st of 2004. The $127,000 figure was what was stated in the plea agreement, but it was clear that he was working in a sort of advisory, unofficial capacity, helping it get it up and running through the end of 2003 when it effectively went into effect on January 1st, 2004. There is testimony, I believe it's in the cross, I could be wrong on that, to the effect that he was then at some point in time given a retroactive compensation package for his work earlier in 2003, but I would refer you to that to be specifically sure.
Senator Larry Bomke, isn't it true that Joseph Carey testified under oath that he was later told that a plan being put in place by persons identified by Governor Blagojevich as trusted associates, which plan was in fact to give contracts, legal work, investment banking work, and consulting work to persons who helped the administration, and in turn, those persons would be solicited for campaign contributions?
Yes, Senator.
Senator Tim Bivens, isn't it true that Joseph Carey testified in federal court that Governor Blagojevich, then known as Public Official A, through the same trusted associates was selecting consultants for private equity funds, seeking state pension fund business as part of a political fundraising strategy?
Senator Bivens, I believe that's a fair characterization. I would only note that at the point in time where Mr. Carey was testifying in court, they had identified Public Official A as Governor Blagojevich and his campaign fund. Public Official A was part and parcel of the plea agreement, the preceding plea agreement, but I think that's a fair characterization.
From Senator Frank Watson, did you testify that Mr. Carey's law firm was doing work for the state of Illinois during the Blagojevich administration? If so, do you know when that started?
Senator Watson, I believe I just clarified that, and I think I clarified that.
Senator Larry Bomke, is Joseph Carey's testimony in U.S. versus Resko, he states that Chris Kelly informed him that the governor needed his help to raise money on a national level and that it would be good for the law firm or private equity firm. He also stated that he could have whatever he wanted. Do you understand this to mean that Carey would receive valuable state assets in return for assisting Blagojevich with national funding efforts? Do you have any reason to doubt that Kelly was acting on behalf of the governor when he made this statement?
Senator Bomke, as to the first question, that's the exact inference that I drew from it. And as the second, I would answer no.
From Senator Frank Watson. You mentioned Chris Kelly on direct. Is this the same Chris Kelly who just pled guilty in federal court to federal criminal charges?
Senator Watson, as you can imagine, we've been a little bit busy, but and I haven't reviewed the actual plea of Mr. Kelly, but it's my understanding they're one and the same.
Senator Brad Brzezinski. And it's three parts, and I'll read the three parts for you, sir. Mr. Kerry's plea agreement pleading guilty for extortion was dated September 15, 2005. Isn't that correct? The extortion was related to go ahead.
I'm sorry. May I get the document out, Mr. Justice? Thank you. Okay. Go ahead, sir.
You don't want me to repeat the question, do you?
No. Go ahead, sir.
The extortion was related to selecting consultants in 2004 for the Illinois Public Pension Funds, wasn't it? So this 2004 extortion was known in September 2005 at the time of the plea agreement. Isn't that correct?
As to the first question, it was September 15, 2005. That is in your packet. As to the second question, the extortion that he the attempted extortion that he acted upon was related to Illinois public pension funds. And in fact, if you read the entirety of the document, there is a substantial factual basis that outlines the attempted extortion that becomes the substance and basis of the plea agreement. I don't know where you went, Senator Brzezinski. There you are.
From Senator Brad Brzezinski again. Mr. Kerry's plea agreement pleading guilty for extortion was dated September 15th, 2005. Isn't that correct? The extortion was related.
I think that's the one we just did, Mr. Chief Justice.
Okay, I'm sure you're right. Senator Larry Bomke, to the best of your knowledge, the governor has no statutory authority to influence or otherwise direct the action or votes of planning board, does he? So would it be fair to say that any attempt by Governor Blagojevich to do so would be outside his statutory authority?
Senator Bomke, I assume you're referring to the Health Facility Planning Board? If that's what you're referring to, that's my understanding, yes. And that then that would be outside of his authority. That's my opinion. But again, you all are free to draw whatever conclusions, opinions you would like.
From Senator Paul Atoff. Are the entries in Illinois who wish to build a health facility required to obtain a certificate of need, a CON, from the planning board prior to construction?
Yes, they are. For many types of facilities, there are probably some that are exempted, but in many cases, they must.
Is it also proper to infer that prosecution health facilities and their clients, the taxpayers of the state of Illinois, have a vested interest in decisions made by the planning board?
Yes, I think that's fair.
Okay. Is it fair, from Senator Carol Pankow, is it fair to say that in your mind, as well as others, that Mr. Resko was a friend, advisor, and close confidant of the governor?
And yes.
And then Mr. Resko acted on the governor's behalf?
That's what I took from the testimony, yes.
Also true that in United States versus Resko, Stuart Levine testified that Tony Resko directly influenced the decisions of the planning board to award a CON in exchange for a political contribution to friends of Blagojevich.
Senator Pankow, there's only a very, very small part of the ADA testimony, 2-3 pages, 4 most, that deals with the Health Facilities Planning Board. That was not why I was called here as a witness, so I have not gone back and thoroughly reviewed those documents. I know that they are, I believe that that was in the sum and substance of your question was primarily contained in the affidavit of Special Agent Kane. I read that at the time that we were considering it, and I believe he was here yesterday. So rather than answer your question and get something wrong, I'd probably refer you to what to other to his testimony. But I don't know.
I think this is the next one. Did Levine also testify that in 2003, Resco informed him that he had some people in mind that he wanted to be appointed to the planning board, and that one of those individuals was named Alamazu?
Pardon me for one moment. Chief Justice. Did not familiarize myself with the Levine testimony and purpose here today. I was here for yesterday and today, limited purpose of ATA and Resco. I would note, however, in the ATA direct, there is some discussion involving the folks that you, the individual you mentioned here. Again, it's a very brief discussion. If I may just have a second to find it. It begins on page 66, line 20, and the assistant U.S. attorney questioning Mr. Atta, quote, "All right, and what did Mr. Resco say to you about the Health Facilities Planning Board?" End quote. Answer, quote, "That he had some people in mind to appoint and will be appointing some people to the Board of Health Facilities Authority," end quote. Question, quote, "Did he tell you the names of the individuals?" End quote. Answer, yes, that was in quotes. Question, quote, "What names did he tell you?" End quote. Answer, quote, "Dr. Almanesir, Dr. Fortune," I don't know how to pronounce this, but Fortune, and Dr. Malek, end quote. And it goes on shortly thereafter, but that's.
Both of these statements were made under oath in federal courtroom, correct?
Well, again, that question. The question refers to Mr. Levine's testimony, so I cannot answer that question. But the quotes I just read were from Mr. Atta's testimony, which was under oath and subject to cross-examination.
Next, from Senator Dale Riesinger. Isn't it true that Stuart Levine testified under oath that in October of 2003 conversation with Governor Blagojevich, he thanked Blagojevich for reappointing him to the planning board?
Senator, I would politely refer you to Agent Kane's testimony in the affidavit. That was not the purpose for which I was here.
Did Stuart Levine also testify that the governor told Levine, "You stick with us and you will do very well for yourself"?
Politely, the same answer.
Do you have any reason to doubt that there were, in fact, the words of the governor?
I can't answer that question.
Senator Bill Brady, is it true that two members of the plan board, Thomas Beck and Imad Al-Mazner, have testified in federal court that they took direct orders from Mr. Resco when voting on the approval of a CON application?
Again, Senator Brady, as I stated to the other senators, this was in pre-scene testimony outside of the scope of why I was here. I refer you to that, and I know it's contained, the sum and substance of your questions contained in the affidavit, the sworn affidavit of Special Agent Kane.
So did one or both of the planning board members in question ever testify that they believe Resco issued his directives for CON applications on behalf of the governor?
Senator, politely, the same answer.
And also from Senator Brady, Bill Brady, did Jeffrey Mark, executive secretary of the Illinois Health Facilities Planning Board, or David Cavalho, deputy director, Illinois Department of Public Health, testify before the House Special Investigation Committee? If not, why not?
I don't believe they did, and I can't. I believe that this is part of the prohibited area for the U.S. Attorney's Office, but again, we're going back some point in time here, and this was not why I was asked to be here today. So I could get you an answer, Senator.
Senator Paul Atoff. Did anyone testify under oath that the board members, Alamazer, Beck, and Levine, were directed by Resco to vote against approving a CON application submitted by Mercy Hospital? If so, when?
Senator Althoff, I would refer you to Special Agent Kane's affidavit. That was not the purpose of my testimony here.
Was there sworn testimony that Resco eventually reversed his position and directive and asked that the planning board members approve Mercy's CON and application?
Same answer, Senator Althoff.
Did Mr. Levine also testify that Mr. Resco ordered the approval of Mercy's CON application because Mercy had agreed to make a political contribution to Blagojevich?
Again, same answer, Senator Althoff.
Senator Bill Brady, is it true that the planning board eventually approved the Mercy Hospital application by a vote of 5-4?
My memory serves from having read the affidavit months ago, but again, that's accurate, but I would again refer you to that and the testimony of others.
Are you aware of sworn testimony that in response to questions by board member Alan Mosner as to why Resco had reversed his directions on Mercy's CON application that Mr. Resco stated the governor wanted to pass?
I remember a statement to that effect in the affidavit, but again, you'd be better off reading the affidavit. That was not why I was asked to be here.
Didn't Resco further testify that Blagojevich was fully aware of this decision?
Again, I would refer you to the affidavit of Agent Kane.
Senator Pam Althoff, the governor claims that the health care is a top priority, but doesn't the scheme to control the votes on the health facilities planning board show that he was more concerned with campaign contributions than providing access to health care?
Again, that the sum and substance of that is in the special agent's affidavit. However, I will tell you my recollection from being a member of the committee was that certainly he was not, the actions of the health facility planning board were not concerned with providing health care. That's my opinion.
Doesn't the fact that a hospital had to pay bribes or make campaign contributions add to the cost of providing health care in Illinois?
Sure. I think that would be a factual statement about any bribe for anything that would add to the cost of doing business.
Senator Kirk Dillard, did Aliata ever make cash contribution to Friends of Blagojevich, or were they all by check?
Senator, I don't know if there were any cash contributions. I know that the two I referenced yesterday, my memory is that they were both by checks. There was testimony that there were additional earlier contributions. I don't know what form those took. There was also some testimony that later on additional cash donations were taken to Mr. Resco, although it seemed a little bit unclear from the testimony as to where those ultimately ended up.
What was the total amount from 2002 to the present of Alta's contributions to the Blagojevich campaign?
To the president, I don't have that answer for you, Senator. We could, I'm sure, get you an answer.
Did he give donations to any other political committees? If so, which ones and how much?
I believe his testimony came that he had been involved in politics. I don't know what other committees and how much.
Are you aware of any money that has been given directly or indirectly to Governor Blagojevich personally, his family, or any immediately that Governor Blagojevich's personal, intermediately that Governor Blagojevich personally, his family, or any others subsequently provided the money to Governor Blagojevich or his family?
I know you can read the question in print.
Senator, I'm not sure what basis of knowledge I'd have from my personal knowledge of anything that would have gone to Governor Blagojevich or his family. So I've read press accounts of, I think, gifts, but I don't know that I have any personal, well, I don't have any personal knowledge. So I can't really answer your question.
From Senator Luchenfeld, is it safe to say that much of the information that has been raised as grounds for the impeachment charge occurred during the first 4 years of Governor Blagojevich's administration?
Senator, I would say this, that there appears to be a pattern of abuse that began before he was even elected that's continued through the present day. And I would note I would note that most of the sworn affidavit of, or a lot of the sworn affidavit of Special Agent Kane and the arrest of the governor dealt with actions that occurred just last year. So I think what it's safe to say is that my opinion is that it started before he was elected, and then the pattern of abuse has continued up through the arrest.
Okay. Finally, from Senator Watson, much of your testimony has related to Joe Kerry's plea agreement and his testimony in the Rusco trial. Do you know if Joe Kerry has held office for any political party? That office was National Finance Chairman of the Democratic National Committee, or some other title with the Democratic National Committee, isn't it?
Senator, my recollection is that Mr. Kerry was the 2000 finance chairman for Al Gore's presidential bid for the National Democratic Party. I think there's also testimony that he's heavily involved in the U.S. Senate Democratic fundraising operation as well. I don't recall the status. I want to say he was a director of that, but I don't specifically recall that status.
Prosecutor, have any questions of the witness at this time?
Yes. Sorry, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I just have one follow-up question for clarification. Representative Rose, a number of the questions have related to a CON application filed by a Mercy Hospital. Is that the Mercy Hospital located in Crystal Lake, Illinois?
That is my understanding that it is, yes.
Thank you. We have no further questions for this witness.
Representative Rose is excused with the reservation that the witness may be recalled for further questions. You're excused, Senator. Representative, thank you very much. We're going to take a short recess at this time, and I would like to see both President Cullerton and Representative Redonio in my small chambers. Court reporter.
Stand at ease.
At ease.
Well, Justice Fitzgerald, Sean, has called Senate President John Cullerton and Senate Republican Minority Leader Christine Redonio to his temporary chambers, I think probably behind the Senate chambers. I wonder what that's all about.
Well, it's unclear. They certainly have not put in a full day of work so far today, having already taken a 30-minute break after coming in around 9:30. All we have heard this morning, of course, has really been questions of the witness who was on the stand yesterday, State Representative Chapin Rose. And there are more witnesses, a full schedule lined up for today. So it could be concerning the scheduling and the amount of time it's going to take to get those people basically through their witness testimony and then the questioning that followed. It could be some way to discuss how much time is really going to be needed today and maybe for the rest of this trial.
Well, certainly no one can argue about how some aspects of this trial is strikes me as really being kind of cumbersome.
Well, it is, and I think there might be those who say, well, it shouldn't be certainly an easy process to remove a governor, a sitting governor from office. But at the same time, we are going to hear, and a lot of what we're going to hear today is testimony that is rehashed from the House impeachment inquiry panel. You would expect you're going to hear the same things from these people who appeared before that panel back in December, whether it's the state's auditor general or the head of the Joint Commission on Administrative Rules. And it's going to be getting into the true nitty-gritty of state government. I mean, it's not what we heard yesterday, the tapes that were aired regarding a potential pay-to-play scheme of what prosecutors allege was going on. I mean, that's much more explosive than what probably you will hear today. But this certainly does impact state government, the type of testimony we're going to get into later. And those are things that state senators understand full and well. But at this point, like you said, we're not really moving at a very quick pace today. Many people think this process could wrap up with a vote on whether or not to remove the governor from office before the end of this week, but it's probably going to have to go at a faster speed than we have so far today for that to happen.
And for the purpose of updating, the Senate is now standing at ease to accommodate a short conference with Senate President John Cullerton and Republican leader Christine Redonia and Chief Justice Fitzgerald, which will provide us with an opportunity to allow stations joining us for the broadcast to identify themselves. You're listening to live coverage of the impeachment trial of Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich in the State Senate, coming to you from Springfield on IPR.